Empire of the Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
I don't know where to put my hands. I don't know where to look when I'm talking. My name is Kellen Olson. I'm joined, as always, by Kevin Zimmerman. Hi, Kevin.
Hello. We waited until now. Now is a good time to podcast, I would say so. Yes, yes.
We have not podcasted since our own John Gamadoro reported on Thursday of last week that he would not be surprised if a Damian Lillard trade happens that makes Yusuf Nurkic available, and that occurrence would entice the Suns to a swap of Nurkic and Ayton with other stuff thrown in. You and I were on standby. I remember that was a hectic day here because whenever stuff like that comes down, we always have the reaction. I remember when we did the Kevin Durant instant podcast reaction when there was like 90 minutes to go until July 1st started. We're like, is this going to happen now? It feels like it's going to happen now. And that's always how you feel in those circumstances. But we got prepared. We got ready. It seemed like this was the most real out of any DeAndre news in the last 2 years. And we were not waiting for DeAndre Ayton to get traded. We were waiting for Damian Lillard to get traded because Gambo pointed out there was one situation where Dame gets traded and the Suns aren't involved, but there were other situations where Dame was traded and the Suns were involved. We got it today, in case you haven't seen the news. This is actually the first time I've stared at the trade and, like, thought about it.
Well, that's not good. You've been on radio and we've written about it.
So. Well, it's the Suns part of it, obviously, I've outlined, but I didn't look at it from, like, the perspective of what Milwaukee got, what Portland got, and so on, because that's not really what this trade is about in terms of who won or lost it for the other teams. It's if the Suns won or lost it, which we'll get into. Damian Lillard is going to the Milwaukee Bucks. The Portland Trail Blazers are acquiring Drew Holiday, DeAndre Ayton, Toumani Kamara, a 2029 unprotected first-round pick from Milwaukee, and then unprotected swap rights with Milwaukee in 2028 and 2030. The Suns get Yusuf Nurkic, that part of it. And then the other players are Grayson Allen from Milwaukee, and then from Portland they get Nasir Little and Keon Johnson. The Kamara element of it, we should start with.
Not the Ayton part.
Kind of a bummer, man. I was excited to see him play. I'm looking forward to seeing how it goes in Portland. There's my 5 seconds of Toumani Kamara. What'd you think?
I think big picture, you look at, we went into the summer being like, okay, they got four guys on big, big contracts. Got to flip at least one for multiple players. They flip both for multiple players. So you turn Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton into Bradley Beal. We've talked about that. Pretty good basketball man. But then you get, I think it's fair to call Little a viable rotation player, Grayson Allen a viable rotation player, Jordan Goodwin, viable rotation player.
Can you add another word in front of viable? In between viable and rotation, there's another word.
Starting.
Playoff rotation
that's player. I didn't mention Nurkic, I don't think.
You did not.
So, from a big picture, grand scheme of things, the fact that you have three superstars on max deals now, not four, that you have filled out a roster of, okay, pretty good NBA players. You did really well with minimum contracts. I think they're in a really good spot considering where they were. Now, we'll get into the DA value and Nurk value especially because, like, the whole reason DA had value or in theory would have value is because of what he did in 2021, getting to the finals, being such a unique player who could play 30 plus minutes a night, switch, do different things. I just look at the numbers and they made tough decisions and they filled out a roster around three really good players. Now we have to see how that all fits together. And I, that's the excitement, right, about this team this year is just like how these three stars are going to fit, but also do they have the pieces around them to put together a good team? And that brings in Frank Vogel, it brings in a whole new staff, all that stuff. And I think they've done a good job roster constructing, and they still have picks. We shouldn't not mention that they're going to have to make some more moves, whether it's cutting or trading, because
two more spots, right?
Yeah, I think so, because they're overstaffed right now, which is a good thing. And I think like the Isaiah Todd trade wasn't a big deal, but
yeah, can we briefly reroute the conversation there while we're on it? Keon Johnson obviously makes sense to look around and take a flyer on. Keon Johnson, a former first round pick, went in the 20s to the Clippers, didn't really materialize anything there, and then I believe it was the Norman Powell Rocco trade where he went to Portland. So see, okay, young player, more opportunities, didn't really find a role there. And I mean, that was a team where there was ample opportunity everywhere.
Our guy Brandon Williams was like doing that.
Yeah, exactly. So he's the guy that seems to make the most sense in terms of either they let him go or they try to get him for 2 seconds or a draft swap or whatever. I joked to you when we were on Wolf and Luke that I'm sure they're about to trade for pick swaps again or something. There's going to be something going on in there with how creative they've been this offseason, which we've talked about extensively. What I want to ask you, though, do you think Allen or Little is under consideration? Something Kevin Pelton mentioned in his trade grades was this is the last year the Suns can do the aggregation of salaries where they combine them. And that's where Allen and Little and their numbers make a little more sense. But then again, if we're looking at the pecking order, and this is something I think we're going to talk about a lot more next week, we had debates sitting at our desks. We've got this series. We're looking at the fifth starters. We're still going to be doing it. We're still going to be going. It's just going to stall out for today, obviously, to react to everything else. But we're looking at all the guys who could potentially be the fifth starter. And in my opinion, Allen and Little are ranked pretty highly in terms of the possibilities and the skill sets that they have. I don't think Allen and Little are guys you could have, for example, feasibly gotten on the veterans minimum if they were out there in free agency this year, which they weren't, obviously. But do you think the Suns are done in that sense? Could they look to, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, but it's like, what other assets do you have? How much value does someone like Little have? Can you get someone more proven, older? Do you think that's something they should explore? They do explore? What do you think?
I mean, on top of, I went through all the depth that you have of rotation players, but how their salaries kind of are tiered now, it's okay, it's only three max deals. They're big. When you had four, like, it was hard because it was like top heavy, and then there was Landry Shamet, who had like 10 or 11 million, and then it was just like minimum guys. But now you have different sets of like, okay, I can package like a $5 million deal and a $10 million deal. Like, there was more variance in that, and that just gives you better opportunity to trade. So to answer your question, I think they can definitely deal these pieces that they have now a lot easier and just get the math to work. I don't know if like right now you would necessarily deal with Grayson Allen. He's a little redundant with Eric Gordon, in my opinion.
Defense is a little slept on.
Yeah. I think he's a good player.
I don't think that he's out of the realm of possibility for my... So my big thing with Kade Bates-Diop is I don't know if he can guard Steph Curry or Ja Morant or De'Aaron Fox. No one can guard those guys, but can he provide resistance in some kind of way? I think it's tougher for him with how big he is, but that's where Allen and Little are theoretically better fits from a size perspective in that, because there's a size perspective of a small forward, which is what Kade Bates-Diop is, like, in every sense. But then there's the who's guarding the opposing ball handler. Do we want Beal and Booker to do that? Probably not. And that's no shade at their defensive ability, particularly Booker's, who we were sitting here after game two of the Denver podcast, like, it's probably bad that Devin Booker's doing everything offensively and he's also the best option to guard Jamal Murray. Like, that's probably bad.
Yeah.
Probably not good.
Not good.
But to go back to the bigger overall picture of the deal, I asked you about that just because I think that our feelings on the value of the trade and if the Suns won or lost it, I think we have to wait. We have to wait and see.
You're no fun. I'm just kidding. This is how it works.
We have to wait and see for several different reasons, but if you want the more boring, in my opinion, is the answer of like, yeah, they won the trade. They won the trade. I think that they got better with this move. And we'll dive into the reasons why I think that way. But to go back to the main part of this trade, which is DeAndre Ayton, we talked extensively in the offseason. We have talked extensively for years now about the possibility of him getting moved, what the return would be, all this kind of stuff. And you and I, with how limited and the amount of wiggle room that was pretty much non-existent for James Jones and his staff to upgrade the roster, trading DeAndre seemed almost inevitable in that sense. But then it was also looking for teams that would be interested in him. Who would want him? How would the trade look? You know how many people did fake trades with Portland over the summer and it included Anthony Simons or Shaedon Sharpe? No, they were never going to get those types of guys. It was never going to happen. His trade value was never that high. What happened with him in the postseason, and I covered this in my column on ArizonaSports.com, what happened with him in the postseason, I can't emphasize the importance enough of when I turned on Inside the NBA, there were Chuck and Shaq talking about what we've been talking about for years. All of these conversations that were pretty local still, even the bigger and like smarter, astute analysis from a lot of people, they would briefly touch on Aiden's effort and engagement, but not really like keep the conversation. They'd be like, yeah, he's still good. Like, we'll see what's happening. Like, but now it was like, this is an issue. Like, people were treating it like it was an issue because it was an issue. So those things, you'd be surprised how often those types of conversations are happening in real time in the actual like business of it, like,
yeah,
in the front in offices, that,
yeah,
in the ownership discussions, like all of those kinds of people who are having conversations. The timing usually coincides. You'd be a lot more surprised. Now, this isn't to say that you and I sitting here in these chairs are to the caliber of basketball knowledge or analysis of those people. I would double, triple, quadruple, whatever is after quadruple times 50 in that regard, in my opinion. But that is a thing. And that was when it was happening in the Denver series. I was like, oof, this is not good, not only for him, but for the Suns in general, if they want to move on from him. And that's where we're at. On Monday, fortunately, because of Gamble's reporting, and I told him this, like, I was able to really wrap my head around this for a week. I was really able to see what the possibilities were. I was able to watch tape on at least Little and Nurkic and kind of see what there was there. But some of what I was able to do as well was kind of wrap my head around the center, what it is today. I'm trying not to be too grandiose. Is grandiose the right way? Is that the right use of grandiose, or is it the other way? Am I using an antonym in this situation?
I don't know. What are you going to say?
Come on, lead editor. You're fucking letting me down, man.
I
just write centers. That's all I did. I was acting like I did some big thought process. I was like, no, let me write down every center in the league and rank them. And what I found is I had DA outside the top 15, but I also had Nurkic outside the top 25.
Yeah.
So, again, I encourage you to do the exercise yourself and see. You'll be surprised at how many solid slash up and coming centers there are. Like when Jeremy was hovering over me, it was like Alperen Şengün, probably too low on your list, Kel. You're probably going to want to move him up a bit. Walker Kessler, all right, right. Cool. Where's Jalen Duren on your list, Kellen? Like where's he going? He's got to be up there a bit. So you go through those guys rather quickly, and the main thing that I realized in the exercise is one, the main thing holding both of these guys back is consistency. And not talent, because I would take Steven Adams or Kevon Looney in a heartbeat over DeAndre Ayton, because I just know every night what I'm getting.
Yep.
Those guys together are not more talented than DeAndre Ayton. And that's talking about Kevon Looney, who was a perimeter player at UCLA, and Steven Adams, who was a lottery pick. But together, talent-wise, they're not even close. You could turn them into one basketball player together. You could do the Space Jam experiment on them. And DeAndre's still more talented, but the consistency just wasn't there. So I think the main thing from trading DeAndre, and it, so let me redirect it back to you, because I'm kind of getting here, but I don't know what your thoughts on it. I made mine known. Do you think the main part of this trade from the Suns' perspective is seeing what they look like, feeling the relief, whatever you want to call it, or however aggressive you want to be in your phrasing of it and your viewpoint of it? Do you think the main aspect of this trade is just not having DeAndre on the team anymore? Or do you think that it actually does have to do... It always has to do with a return, but do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because I think it does, I don't know if everyone agrees.
I
know everyone doesn't agree.
I think that's the tipping point where, again, adding depth matters, having salary situations matter, and again, they actually are paying more now currently as it's constructed, but again, they might ship someone out, so it might be better in a little bit, but it's about the same. But I think that was the tipping point where it was, okay, when you do science experiments, you always want to get like random factors out that you non-controllables, right? And he was a non-controllable. And to your point about like, you know what you're getting from Steven Adams, you know what you're getting from like a Jonas Valanciunas, that type of guy, Zubac, like maybe they're not that talented, but you know what you're getting. I think they're getting a variable that they can't control out of the system and just being like, okay, we know what we're getting from all of these guys on this roster. And to some degree, that's, I mean, that is about DeAndre, right? Like whether that's actual frustration from like his teammates or just like, we can't put together this amazing basketball team because if one thing consistently breaks down, it doesn't matter if all the other pieces are in gear or aligned or working, because that just throws everything else off. And it's one Jenga piece out of the puzzle that just makes it fall down. And if you have that one unreliable Jenga piece and you know where it is and you can get it out of the system and replace it with just a solid one, then you're good. And to me, that's what it is. And again, that doesn't mean I know or whether it's true that his teammates maybe didn't like him or were fed up or if he was unhappy, because like that's true too. Like he could have been asking for a trade and they're just over the past year plus and they're just like, all right, we'll do it when it makes sense. But I feel for him too as a human being, because it's probably not fun to be, and he said it this summer, like he felt like the world was against him. It's not fun to be part of trade rumors for a year plus. So there are a lot of reasons for it to move on, but I think it was stemming at the basketball operations level from his play, right?
Yeah, to cover that part of the conversation, I think one of the most difficult things about doing our podcast, it's difficult to do a basketball podcast, like shut up, Kellen, but one of the most difficult parts is we say things in so many places that I don't necessarily cover everything here that I've covered a million places everywhere else. I've said this on here a number of times, but to that point of like feeling for DeAndre, maybe my favorite player I've covered so far from a interview perspective, because we never know what we were going to get from him, whether it was good or bad. But his honesty, I talked about all the time, especially during the 2022 run when you talked to me when I was in a hotel room in New Orleans, and you were just like, I don't know, man, this isn't the team we covered. I don't know what happened. The one guy who was saying that stuff was DeAndre. He was the one guy who was like, dude, I don't know why we're not talking on defense anymore. Like, I don't know. Like, and all this kind of stuff. He was always honest in that regard. And then, of course, where you think about honesty and sharing his perspective with some of the like negatives, like talking the Monty thing, that was nuts. But it was fun to cover him, and like his energy when it was there was just so much fun to be around, because you never knew what he was going to say. Like one of the quotes that I remember from him was like, I'm going to like move to the moon or something if Monty doesn't win Coach of the Year or whatever. And then he like looked into the Zoom camera and said like, NASA, I'm going to need you to get on the hookup here or something like that. I can't remember what exactly he said, but he was great to cover. And I will miss it, and I wish him well in Portland. And here's the thing, Kevin. I don't know if it is going to go exceedingly well to the point where the Suns are lambasted for this trade in the future. But I do think that he is going to get the clarity that he needed, because he obviously wasn't able to get it here with the role that he was looking for, with how he wanted to be utilized, just like anyone else would, not pointing fingers and saying it's wrong what he wanted. And a lot of guys want that at that point in their career with how talented he is, and he's going to get it in Portland. So I'm really excited. They shot up my league pass rankings by 15 teams at this point to watch him. To your point on the trade itself, again, going back to that, an addition by subtraction, however you want to put it, I think ultimately referencing our past work again, because I think we have so many people here listening for the first time, but a lot of people also who have been listening for a couple of years now, we had conversations. There's somewhere in the archives, there's a podcast where with a week to go in the regular season or leading into that Lakers series, we're like, I don't know, man, DeAndre doesn't look ready for this. Like, he just doesn't look ready for it. And I pulled it in my column. I found the post where I wrote about Mikal's extension, Cam's extension, DeAndre's extension, like all this kind of stuff, where like, this is going to help us figure out exactly what the next 5 years are going to look for them. And one of them was, if this level of stagnation, mixed efforts, whatever you want to call it, with DeAndre, which was at an all-time high for us after 3 years of covering him, not even in his rookie season was it that wobbly in terms of like, okay, like Moses Brown is starting at center for Oklahoma City. What's going on right now? Where is he on the floor? DeAndre, I'm meaning, like, what's going on? I wrote that if this continues in the playoffs, like they got to ask themselves, like, is it worth risking it again? Another year of contention, another part of this window, risking another year on wondering if he's going to show up or not. What does he do? He earns that money, baby. He goes out there and crushes it. He destroys. He's maybe, I think there is an argument to be made. I wouldn't say this, that he was their second best player on that run. Like Chris had some rough goes. It was a lot of, speaking of a lot of highs, a lot of lows. That was Chris's postseason run. It was so many highs that I think it's still him and Devin that were their best two players. But DeAndre's right there as number three, easily, way over Mikal. Not even close. He was tremendous. And I was like, give him the extension. All the concern faded. And then the Dallas series happened. And then the Monty stuff happened. And then there were still kind of those moments. And then last year was the first year of his career where I felt like he actually, not only did he not get better, but like he got worse. And then all of that came to a head in the playoffs where it really, really showed on a really big scale. And you could just see things starting to kind of crumble for him in real time. And it was really tough to watch. So from that perspective, I thought it was a no-brainer. I sat here in this room when we went through the whole West for 2 hours. We did like a 2.5-hour podcast, whatever that was. And at the end, we talked about, do we think the Suns will win it? And I told you, they're not my pick right now. And the only reason is DeAndre. And that was it. Because I couldn't confidently tell you that they were going to get what they needed out of him for four straight playoff series over 6 weeks, 2 months. It's a long time to expect that out of him. So when it comes down to them being better or worse, with that factor out of the way, and still bringing in a guy who is a starting caliber center. Now he's a top 25, 30 center in the league who's a starting caliber center who still can do some things defensively. He's going to get hunted off the floor. We'll talk about that in a bit. And they got two other guys who can factor in their playoff rotation potentially. But I think not having that question is going to positively affect the team and the makeup of it and just how much easier things are going to feel for them, which is also a weird thing to say because there's like three guys left from last year's team. So like, that's always a weird thing to say out loud, but that's where I'm at, man. I think they got better, but to sit here and confidently say it, I don't think you're being rational. But it's weird because I do think you're being rational if you think they confidently got worse, because the talent is duh. Like, he's not even, the talent disparity is off the charts between him and Nurkic, not even close.
The wild part for me is I wanted personally to see Frank Vogel work with him because I always framed it like this. He was going to be asked to do more, right? He was going to be asked to blitz more. He would be asked to at least be level on screens more, to switch and in between plays, change coverages, or depending on what the play was, to change coverages. I didn't see enough of that with Monty. That was just Monty's defense, really, I think. Not that they didn't adjust, but they didn't adjust in wild ways very often. I wanted to see DeAndre handle that and be asked to do more and see if maybe that would empower him. I think I know the answer would be that he would still have those spirals where he would mess those things up and it wouldn't go well. But I wanted to see maybe if it's a new voice in his ear where he just is focused and that changes things. I know that's oversimplifying things, but it didn't seem like he had a great relationship with his past coach. So I'm disappointed we didn't get to see that because I think that would have given me the more firm answer of, okay, it's not there.
Yeah, I wonder if we're going to get there to the point where the reporting does come out, if it is in fact that this was like a majority of this motivation to move him was actually what he wanted.
Yeah.
Which is very possible because the situation was not great for him in a couple of different ways.
And he was open about it
from his perspective.
Yeah. And to give him credit, he was always like super open about like wanting to do more. And dating back, if you look at his history, going back to Arizona, it was like, let me shoot more three because coach, it's like, I don't think you're good enough, but maybe you can pick spots. And then he would try, and then Monty would shut him down after like two games of him kind of hinting at maybe he was thinking about it. I don't know. Playing with Scoot and that team, Shade and Sharp, like, I think that squad will be utilizing him. Obviously, he's going to be the role man. He's going to have a lot more responsibilities offensively. But I've said this on the radio, I've probably said it on the past podcast, like, I went and read after this season, I think, your basically big column on why they shouldn't draft DeAndre. And it wasn't even about Luka at that point. It was about DeAndre's red flags and just the things we saw at Arizona when he was playing there.
The headline was not number one, DeAndre and then the versatility of modern centers. I still remember the headline because of how much of like a, I knew that was going to be a polarizing piece when I posted it thing.
Yeah, and so I read it at the end of this past season, and it reads like you could write it today about him today. And again, he got better. He was...
To be clear, this is not a Kellen is right parade, because no. In that story, I say Luka can't play point guard. Whoops. And I also wrote some things that DeAndre, I thought, was going to do worse, and he wound up doing better.
So. Yeah, and he did develop, but it was... The big picture stuff were about consistency, were about... Do you actually have more to your offensive game? Like, yeah, he has a little mid-range spot up, but does he have dribble stuff? Does he have down-the-hill versatility where he can take a dribble and move like Amari Stoudemire? No, still hasn't developed that. Like, the one play with him at the Bahamas this summer where he, like, actually took a dribble and went on the other side and dunked, like, it was like, oh, that shouldn't be, for a number one pick, like, surprising that he took a dribble or two or whatever and... went to the other side and threw it down. Like, that shouldn't be a thing that impresses us that much.
The damning play in there is the one against, it's some random, like, Rhode Island, Northern Iowa thing. He does the, I'm 4 feet away, but I'm going to pivot out and spin 8 feet to get 8 feet away for a hook shot against some 6'8".
6'7", yeah.
Yeah, some 6'8"
dude. Forward center.
Probably a lawyer right now or something. You know what I mean? So... those kinds of things never really went away, and now they're moving on. I think it's safe to say, much like Mikal, this is something we're not going to be talking about for the last time. Mm-hmm. We're going to be checking in with Portland and seeing how it goes. And to give my last thoughts on it before we move on to what they got in return, the whole point of what I wrote on the site in my column is that, listeners know, if you've heard me talk basketball anywhere for more than 3 minutes, you've probably heard me, some people like to characterize it as like waffling or not having a hardcore stance on something, but I just think that things are very, very rarely black and white in basketball and like in everything really. But this is a black and white thing to me. The Suns are either going to be better or worse without him, and it's going to be pretty obvious when we see it. And then this is either going to be the best thing that ever happened to DeAndre, or it's just going to be the latest... I was going back to pull a meme and I was really happy about it and then I forgot it. Like the I can fix him meme.
Yeah.
I can fix her meme where it's like Monty Williams, Chris Paul, Kevin Durant, and now it is Chauncey Billups in Portland. And I hope they do, because I think something probably we didn't talk about enough and I didn't talk about enough is that when DeAndre is playing well and he's there, he's one of the most fun guys to watch in the league. Because it was like that 2021 tape, I could watch it all day.
Yeah.
Just with how hard he's playing and everything that he's helping his team do without ever touching the ball.
Yes. Yeah.
Is really cool. And I'm looking forward to seeing how him and Scoot get going. I think they're going to be a fun team to watch. I think he is not fading out of the conversation here for the rest of the podcast, because you have to compare him to Nurkic. And something I'm writing about on the site right now that'll be up later tonight, probably by the time you're listening to this, it'll be up, is I declare Frank Vogel as the X factor of this entire trade. Because much like we talked about DeAndre Ayton and how Frank Vogel can get the most out of him, I believe it's now not if Frank Vogel can get the most out of Yusuf Nurkic, but can he build a league average defense around a team that starts Yusuf Nurkic at center? You referenced his 2 years in Orlando. I looked it up and it was 24th and 20th in defensive rating with Vucevic, which is not good.
No.
But it's also, if you told me right now, like at this moment, going into the playoffs, would I take the 20th in defensive rating for the Suns? I think I might.
Yeah.
Like it's below average, but it's not terrible. And they're going to be top three in offensive rating, surely, probably first, with the amount of shooting that they have even more of now. But I think it's going to come down to Vogel, because the excellent Steve Jones of the Dunker Spot has been like, subtweeting some of the takes that have gone around recently about Nurkic specifically and labeling him as a defensive anchor. I think it's like really smart the way that he's like putting it there, because every center is an anchor or whatever, right? Like that's what their job is, but you have to be good at it to actually anchor the defense, and that's not necessarily how Nurkic works. But you can build what Steve alluded to in some of his tweets from today is you can probably build a solid enough defense around him to make it work. Nurkic, the quick background here, at least on him defensively, is not the most mobile guy. Very top-sided. I don't know how to put it, really. He's just a massive, strong man. Actually more nimble than you would think, but then he broke his leg in 2019, and man, that sucked and was a tough turn for his career, because at that point in the previous two seasons, teams were shooting around 55% at the rim on him, or shots he guarded were at 55%, because that weird second spectrum data doesn't... It used to be at the rim, and then they changed it in the system. I don't know why. I wish it didn't cost more than a house that I live in to get second spectrum data. But I digress. That is another rant for another day. Bottom line is, he became a pretty solid rim protector. But here's the thing. Rudy Gobert is one of the best rim protectors we've ever seen, Kevin. But can you play him in the Western Conference Finals? You cannot. And that is where here lies the rub. There it is. So now at this stage of his career, he doesn't move as well, but he can still play in that drop. He can occasionally found some clips that are going to be in the story. Like, he's coming to the level against Jalen Green and recovering on him and blocking a shot from behind. Like, he can still move, and he's, again, just... DeAndre is such a gigantic human being that it's hard to compare anyone else and say he's gigantic too, but Nurkic is just massive. He's a huge dude. So that part of the equation, like, he can still protect the rim. Now, on opening night, is Chris Paul going to play him off the floor? Maybe. Might happen. We'll have to wait and see. And that's where I believe, if I had to guess, is he going to close more games than he does not in the playoffs? I would guess no. And I would guess that their closing five is someone else. Is it Durant? Is it Eubanks? Is it Metu? Is it Bull, Kevin? Is it all these centers that they got in July?
I hope that YouTube algorithm picked up. You said bull. Okay, just making sure.
You hear that, SEO gods? Bull.
Send us all the clicks.
Bull highlights. Bull mixtape. Fire emoji. 100 emoji.
Anyway,
my FBI agent is laughing hysterically at his desk right now. He loves this SEO related humor. I hope you're doing well, Damien. I'm deciding my FBI agent's name is Damien. Yusuf Nurkic.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you land on this defense thing? Because is it detrimental? Are his weaknesses detrimental enough for you to feel negatively about this trade? I think for me, it is 80% the whole, like, now we don't know who closes games at two positions. That's not great. 20% is even going to be healthy in April.
Yeah.
That's my worry chart on who I think is going to be someone. There are guys who always come in here, and we as people who watch more NBA basketball than a lot of people watching, and we're just saying that because we have the privilege of it being our jobs and we're able to. He's going to surprise people. And this is not to sit here and say, like, this was a steal. But you're going to watch Nurkic some nights, and you're going to be surprised at how good he is.
Yeah.
Much like we talked about Dario in that way. We've talked about a lot of guys. Like, I think Nasir Little is going to be someone we kind of talk about in that way, where at least when he's rolling, you're going to be surprised at the impact that he can make on the floor. But for you, are you worried enough for this to actually affect the way that it looks at... Do you look at the trade more negatively because of that fact?
No.
It is a fact that he's going to get played off the floor in the playoffs. Like,
it's just a fact
that he should, not if they pull him, but...
I think there are two ways to look at this. One, Nurk is, like, why does Zubac play so much? Because he's smart, he's just a big body, he's a physical body. Offensively, there is a lot of value to just how good of a screener he is as a big body, but also he is, and this is the most exciting part that I'm going to look at, is just his passing, because he's been hovering around 3 assists his entire career. And to me, that's valuable, and he's basically like a larger Dario in some respects. Now, I'm going to say this, and I don't know if I'm right or just making stuff up, but I think you can argue that he might have a better role off the bench, and that's where you have options, right? Like, I think usually how teams are constructed these days, like Zubac, like Valanciunas, Steven Adams, those bigs are in the starting lineup, and then you play them 20 minutes, 25 minutes tops, and you're good. I think he could be a bench option with more spacing and shooters with Lee Watanabe. Your defense gets really questionable then. But yeah, I see it as they have more options now. And I think the biggest factor in this is Frank and signaling that they're going to be more comfortable playing small. And I think the Nasir Little part of this is major, because with Nurk coming in and being that limited, you need a big body to like four who could, in many stints against other teams, play small ball five. And I think Little is that guy, where maybe Bates Diop was that guy too, but you have a couple options.
It's KBD if it is him. Nasir Little is like he's 6'5" thing for me.
He is thick though.
7'2", strong man. A lot of not the strongest man on the team. That is the strong man himself, yeah. Ish Wainwright. But I agree with you. I think that a fun anecdote, not a fun anecdote, but a relevant anecdote here. Do you know why Yusuf Nurkic wasn't closing games for Portland?
Because you could hunt him.
You know who they played instead of him?
Drew Eubanks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've said this before, I'll say it again. The one guy out of the eight or nine guys that they added in the offseason that I went back and watched a tape and was the most impressed with, because again, these are guys who are barely watching. Sorry, everyone, I wasn't locked in on the Blazers that much last year when Drew Eubanks really stood out in the year before. But he was impressive, man. I looked at him and I was like, if they move Ayton and it's more of a committee thing at center and they just need a rock solid 22 minutes out of someone, I think this is a guy for sure. Can he close playoff games? Have to wait and see. Don't really know about the defense just yet in the same ways of Nurkic. Like, how much can you hunt him? I don't know. But the rim protection from him was also pretty solid from that point. But you've got Metu, you've got Bol Bol. Like, they put options in place clearly by design, thinking that this was at some point going to happen. Otherwise, why would you have all these centers? Which is why we sit here. Guess what makes a lot more sense now? Signing Bol Bol. It did not make much sense 2 months ago. Now it makes a whole lot more sense and is a move that I approve. I approve now. I didn't even approve it before. I was just shrugging, like, whatever, sure. And now it's like, now it makes sense, because I think you need to take as many lottery tickets, or whatever you want to call them, chances on development as you can with that position specifically. What you just said, and something I mentioned on Burns and Gambo, is that we have now gone from four guys who were guaranteed in the rotation to three. I really don't even think Nurkic is there anymore, because speaking of hotel conversations I've had with you after game five in Denver, I was like, Jock Landale's got to start, man. And you were just like, you can't sit DeAndre. I think you can sit Nurkic. Yeah. I think it's easier to do.
Yeah.
Now, and guess what? He's just much like the Eric Gordon thing. We're going to see a lot of games where he's not playing. It's just he gets hurt. That's how it goes. Hopefully for the Sun's sake, and just getting to see this whole thing out for us too, he's going to be playing in April. But we're going to see what it looks like without him. We're going to see some of these other options. Like, I do think that I did not go into the season thinking that Metu or Bol Bol were going to get many looks at all. And like, we were going to go into April being like, still having fans be like, man, I want to see what Bol Bol's got. You know what I'm saying? Like, everyone clamoring for Terrence Ross and all these guys in April because we hadn't seen enough of it yet. We didn't know what it looked like, really. TJ Warren, another one where it's like, I want to see TJ out there, man. Why haven't we seen them? I think we're going to see nearly everyone. Like, I think just about everyone is going to get really opportunities. Maybe Damian Lee is one of the few guys just because he's so proven and such a commodity for them and known commodity, I should say, at this point. But everyone else, I think, is really going to get a look. Let me ask you this. Are you with me that they have enough at center to win a championship now?
Oh.
It's a question now in a different way. We were asking it in a different way.
Imagining hitting Jokic with this roster is tough. Imagining hitting Giannis with this roster is tough.
Okay, let's go through Western Conference teams. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because the Suns helped, by the way. Did we mention that they traded Damian Lillard to the Bucks?
We'll get there. We got a lot of time, buddy. Nothing but time. Thankfully, your students at Cronkite did not have to worry about this tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Would you just cancel the class I asked you earlier? Can you do that? You got it like that?
I can't answer that question on this public podcast. There's my answer. I'll tell you after.
I didn't realize I was blowing up the spot. I'm so sorry. Okay. The Denver Nuggets have Nikola Jokic. The Minnesota Timberwolves have Karl Anthony Towns. The Oklahoma City Thunder have Chet Holmgren. I don't know what to do with that. The Portland Trailblazers have DeAndre Ayton.
Yeah.
The Utah Jazz have Walker Kessler. I don't know where he factors into your conversation. The Golden State Warriors have Kevon Looney. I mean, he's going to at least be incredibly annoying.
Yeah.
Clippers, Zubac. Lakers have that Anthony Davis guy. He ain't bad.
Yeah.
The Kings, they've got DeMontis Sabonis. He's pretty darn great. The Dallas Mavericks have Derek Lively the second. They have Maxi Kleba.
Is Dwight Powell still around?
We no longer have JaVale McGee.
No. They're fine. It's fine there.
The Houston Rockets have Alperen Şengün.
Nah.
The Memphis Grizzlies have Steven Adams and Jaren Jackson Jr. The New Orleans Pelicans have Jonas Valanciunas. Boy, I'm excited to cover Valanciunas Nurkic. I'll be there.
Yeah.
Can I just have popcorn and a soda with me like I'm at the movies? The Spurs have Zach Collins and Victor Wembanyama, whatever. They're not part of the conversation, at least in the short term, right now. So there's our thought exercise. Do you have more concern now for the postseason after that thought exercise?
Yeah.
I think I do too, pal. Hmm. But, again, I think a lot more of my hesitation would be around...
What's wild is...
Sorry. Two things have got to happen this regular season. They've got to.
Yeah.
One, Vogel's got to go through all these guys. He's got to see him out. He cannot be one of those coaches that, and I don't know how he works. We haven't been around him enough yet to like evaluate his little ticks. Like, Monty Williams played Cheick Diallo for 4 minutes, and then we didn't see him for 3 months. He was just gone.
Gone.
Like, that can't happen with someone like Metsu. Like, you got to give him some run here. Let's see what we've gotten all these guys. This regular season is not about getting the first seed. It's going to be about just getting better towards April. That has got to happen, one. And then, two, he has to get these guys in a recoverable enough defense to where if we got to double these post guys, or if we got to scramble and recover, if we got to cover them a certain way, shift more towards this way, that way, he's got to have them in line there. Cause it is a league full of that. And we've seen like Dallas spent, what was it? Like $70 million collective dollars on Christian Wood and JaVale McGee, just cause they were worried about this whole thing.
How'd that go?
I think Nurkic is an underrated one-on-one post defender. I will say that. Like, the whole, like, Sabonis, like, Jokic is, like, no one. Is no one.
Yeah.
Sabonis, pretty much no one. Like, that's a thing. But physically, he can match up with those guys. It's just, like, when Sacramento's running all their DHO nonsense at the top of the key, like, how is Nurkic supposed to handle that in a playoff situation? That's where I grow more hesitation in that kind of regard.
Yeah.
But what was the other option? I felt less confident in the other option still, especially since we got the Denver series last year, because if we wouldn't got the Denver series, I still would have been able to cape on how I watched DeAndre outplay Jokic in 2021. Can't say that anymore. Certainly, like, it was not nearly as good of an, it was like 15 times as worse of an effort from him, and probably more, honestly.
Yeah. That's the weird part of it, though. It's like saying we have the what if. We have the if when you had DeAndre Ayton, but there are certain teams where this roster matches up and you're just like, I don't know what you do. Like, you can't play Nurk maybe half the time that Jokic would play, because he apparently can just play 40 minutes now. That's only one team, but same thing with when you go to Giannis in the Eastern Conference. Obviously, that matters only if you get that far. But yeah, maybe I'm overstating it, because again, like, a lot of the other Western teams, AD worries me to some degree, but of all people who probably knows how to stop that guy, it's probably his former coach. Yeah, it's going to come down to creativity, man, and lineups and combos and finding who fits, and then you have to worry about the offense will be
do
fine.
Do you have a coach that embraces that? If you do, which I believe they do, they're going to be fine.
I think he's going to have to get wild on this team. Yes. He's going to have to get wild, and that's why I still think this trade plays more into, I already thought they had this roster that was very much Josh Okogie, you might start round one. Nasir Little, you might start round two. Drew Eubanks, you might start, like, it could get crazy and you just keep flipping everyone else around the big three. And I'm excited to watch that kind of basketball, because I think people watched Monty get stale, and yeah, they got really far, but
going to be fun to see a better screen setter. And that's DeAndre got much better as a screen setter. I think his angles more than like actual setting the screen were better than like the consistency of the screen wasn't necessarily there, but the angles on the screens were. Nurkic has more of that stuff. I mean, if you run a two-man game with someone like Dame, who Dame loved Nurkic all the time, they were really close there from what I read, he's going to have that down in part of his game. And then quietly, Mr. Nurkic, 36% from three on over two attempts a game last year. Like, you're going to run some pick and pop stuff here with your big, and that you talk about my whole predicament of show and tell of, like, what do you do if Bradley Beal runs a pick and pop with Yusuf Nurkic when Kevin Durant, Devin Booker one pass away? Like,
and that's the thing.
I don't know. Leave Nurkic open, and that's it.
That's the thing about Nurk's passing too, is just dribble handoff stuff high in the key, in the center of the floor. Book and Beal are amazing. You wrote that piece a few weeks ago about Book and Beal working off the ball more. That's going to make it easier on them. Like, when you talked about 0.5 and what Dario did under Monty's offense, like, kind of the same idea, but dude's just, he's a tank, man. That's going to be fun to watch. That's the most excited I am to watch of Nurkic clips.
Creativity and versatility comes back to the forefront again when you bring that up. It's like, are you running enough offense to where you can be creative enough and present enough threats in one given sequence to where Nurkic can get the most out of his passing, which is good. Not to sit here and say that it is like he's a better passer than Ayton. Is it a significant part of the offense now? No.
Yeah.
He's a good passer. He'll find some stuff there. If anyone wants to call an audible on a back door, he's got it. In a pinch, I'm trying to think if there's anything more. We already talked about the injuries. Now, it's one of those weird things like Beal where, like, he did get shut down in some senses, so you don't want to overreact too much, but at the same time, the history with his injuries are there. Most of his strengths offensively are in the one-on-one sense, unlike DeAndre.
Yeah.
I think people will be surprised to hear me say that, but here's the thing about DeAndre Ayton. In the last 3 years, the lowest that DeAndre Ayton shot at the rim was 75%. That was the lowest. Nurkic's career high is 63%. He misses a lot of bunnies, just kind of gets in his head sometimes. I don't really know what it is, but there are inconsistencies and like lulls in his game that are similar to DeAndre's, but the finishing at the rim and the bunnies, like, that's going to have to be a thing that he locks down. Eubanks was someone from an efficiency standpoint that really stood out to me when I watched him as well. So that's another part where if, like, Nurkic misses two bunnies in game four and the Suns are up 2-1 or down 2-1, Vogel just, like,
Eubanks is like top five in post-up points per possession also.
When you have Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal, and someone else is shooting the ball, as we learned last postseason to a certain extent, like, those guys have got to, like, they cannot miss the freebies. Like, the Josh Okogie play, that can't happen. The DeAndre Ayton play, where Matt Peterson was posting that clip, like, one of the handful that came this postseason, where it was like a missed bunny wide open. Nurkic does that as well. Yeah. So that's going to be an interesting part to see the tug and pull, the push and pull there, whatever you want to call it, the tug of war there, in terms of how much the Suns are willing to be okay with that part of his game. But he's a very... I love guys who know where to be, and it just seems like they're always in the rhythm and the flow of the game, and that's from being someone who is a self-proclaimed Dame fan on this podcast. I could tell, like, he had the Dame seal of approval of just, like, I love this guy because he plays tough and he knows where to be.
Yeah.
Kind of, there's some Dario comparisons there, not to make the same comparisons with two European guys in their sense, but it's there. Anything more on our new Bosnian friend?
No, I'm curious what you think between Little and Grayson Allen, because I think Little, like I said, provides a lot of defensive versatility. Maybe when we talk about fifth starter type stuff, but he still has a lot to figure out. Like, I think he's somewhere in between the bowl of getting a second chance and someone a lot better, like DAA. He's somewhere in the middle there. But also Grayson Allen, for as much as people hate him for certain actions he's done and being probably from Duke, he was a double-digit scorer. He played a lot for a Bucks team that, like, important games. And I know they had a bunch of injuries, especially this past year, especially. So maybe his numbers are inflated, but he is probably, especially if we keep talking about Nurkic being played off the floor, Grayson Allen might be the more utilized in some senses. And again, if Eric Gordon wasn't on this team, I would absolutely be like, oh man, they really need this guy. But like, which one do you think is a bigger piece to this playoff puzzle if we're projecting way ahead, I guess?
It's Little if he can defend ball handlers adequately, because if he can do it at an adequate level, Frank Vogel is going to get more than adequate out of him. But because I know that Grayson Allen sort of can, but I know there's a cap on Grayson Allen's effectiveness.
Yeah.
Like if he's guarding Steph in the Western Conference Finals, we got issues.
Yeah.
He can do a good job. He can be annoying and he can put in some
use
work
fouls
there.
And tire out
and be annoying. And I think Grayson is a good overall defender, and I think he's going to surprise people because all the antics, the return of antics, Boss Man 99, gone but not forgotten. But in comes Grayson Allen to pick up where he left off with the antics. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to.
By the way, all three of those
Suns fans absolutely hate him, but the first time he hip checks Pat Beverly, they're going to be in love. So
all three of the dudes who might play out of the Portland trade. Like, all three of them are going to hit someone, I think, and hurt them.
Yes.
So, that's a theme. Okay, continue. Sorry.
No, it's a good bit to hit on it. Dave Burns nailed it, where old heads out there remember how Danny Ainge played and how annoying he was. Like, this is a reminder of that kind of acquisition as well.
Someone in our comments said they just traded for Danny Ainge's Hellspawn, so there's that.
I like that. Not going to mention who he looks like. Not going to give any credence to that individual. But the thing is, I think that I'm curious. I think Nasir Little can be a better defender than Grayson Allen by the end of the season, but I don't know if he is. And here's the thing, Kevin. It's miraculous how many people I all of a sudden have just watched enough Yusuf Nurkic tape to like be able to really break down his game intricately all of a sudden, you know? So there's so much, there's a lot more mystery to this for me. By three games in, I will have seen enough. If Nasir Little and Grayson Allen are in the rotation from day one, we'll be a week into the season. I'll have a extremely better feel for where I am on them as players than I do right now. I would say right now, based on playoff contributions and contributions to great teams, Little hasn't really had the chance in that regard, to be fair to him. But Allen is the better overall defender. But I think there's a chance that Little is better than him as well. And where do those guys stack up with KBD? Where do they stand up with Mr. Okogie, Mr. Yeah. Goodwin, Mr. Gordon? I am not sure. Watanabe, Damian Lee, like all of a sudden, the index card, James Jones, the madman has done it again. He by golly gee whiz, he's found that 3x5 that he was looking for the whole time. I'm just going to defense, Kevin, because that's where offensively you're like, well, Grayson Allen out there for shooting does. So I think like, oh, man. If I'm not off base on Grayson Allen's defense, I think he's the starter opening night.
Ooh.
I think. Just think about the shooter out there, you know? Like,
and is competent. And also, he does do initiation stuff. Like, he can take stuff off Beal and Book. He isn't.
Before he was a shooter, he was an excellent scorer on the Duke Blue Devils.
Yeah.
That was his calling card, was scoring more than shooting. And he's kind of reimagined his career like J.J. Redick did to a certain extent. An easy comparison to make between the two of those guys.
It possibly.
Obviously,
is, yes.
Grayson is a wildly different player in a few different ways, to say the least. But offensively, it's not close. I think that when I was watching Nasir Little tape in the last week, unlike Grayson, there were developments to his offensive game that encouraged me in terms of the 0.5 stuff and just how he could assess things and be capable in that regard. I don't really, do you have more to say on those two guys specifically? So let's play the game right now. Let's do 4 hours after the trade, 5 hours after the trade. Let's pick nine guys right now. Who are the nine guys?
Devin
right
Booker.
Now? Okay, so we have Mr. Booker. We're typing
Bradley
here
Beal.
Live. We have Mr. Beal.
Kevin Durant.
We have Mr. Durant. We have Mr. Nurkic. Give me your fifth starter opening night.
I mean, I'm not even going to think about that, but I'm going to say Eric Gordon. I don't even care if you...
Okay, that's fair. Okay, we get to our fifth guy. Eric Gordon is the first ball handler off of the bench.
Yeah, or one of those. And now, I don't know.
I'm going to pencil in KBD behind Mr. Durant.
Okay.
Now we are at six gentlemen. Let's get Eubanks in there behind Eubanks. Or Eubanks behind Nurkic.
Yeah.
We're at seven.
Two more, you said? Ooh.
We've got Devin Booker. Eric Gordon, and Bradley Beal as our trio in the backcourt. In our on our wing group, we've got KD and Kade Bates-Diop, and then as our big group, which is done, we've got Nurkic and Eubanks. So we've got two more spots.
Did you put Grayson in there yet? You didn't?
Did not.
I think he bumps ahead a good one because of the shooting and the respectable defense, if not annoying.
I'll put Allen behind Beal.
Okay.
Okay. So to be clear.
One more.
Stand by. We have got Nasir Little. He is a candidate.
Okogie.
We got Jordan Goodwin and Mr. Okogie.
Oh, Bol Bol.
Bol Bol, Damian Lee.
Ooh.
Ish Wainwright, Yuta Watanabe.
Oh.
Mr. Metu. I think he's out of it. I think he's more of a five. Yeah. There's some four stuff there that could be percolating for a young player that you've been monitoring as long as you've been monitoring DeAndre and you've been monitoring Mr. Metu. But
you need to have one of the corner guys, and I would think Watanabe would be it over Lee just based on positional what we have thus far. Because
here's my cop out. You ready?
Yeah.
I think KBD starts game one or starts the opening season, like game one of the regular season. But I think it might be Grayson by the end of the year.
Okay. No.
So we got Booker, Gordon, Beal, Allen as the backcourt, and then the wing group we've got Durant, Bates-Diop, Yuta. Then we got Nurkic and Eubanks. So on the outside looking in, we've got Jordan Goodwin, Damian Lee, Josh Okogie. Eric Gordon is in that group. I'm reading his name again just for clarity. Ish Wainwright.
Is Nasir not in the top nine then?
Nasir is the guy that I'm missing. We have no Nasir in the top nine.
Yeah.
Is all of our infatuation with Mr. Bates-Diop just coming from that they might have gotten a steal department where we're overlooking the fact that Nasir Little's better than him? Is that a possibility?
I legitimately don't know the answer because I, again, didn't watch those two poor teams enough.
Nope.
But I think that's the big question is those two because they play the same position, again, redundant. And
the best case is,
does Nasir shoot threes very well right now, last season?
Kind of. He started taking more off the dribble, which was really interesting. And the off the dribble numbers, like it was nearly one. It was like 0.7 a game or something, which again, nothing crazy, but it was like he's actually taking off the dribble threes now. And the numbers weren't, it wasn't like the 38% and 25% numbers you see where 38 for catch and shoot, 25 for pull ups for guys like that. It was actually like in the 30s and pretty decent. So he was still not, we're still wondering, like Bates-Diop, we're still wondering.
Are we being unfair to our returning Suns and Damian Lee and Josh Okogie here, because they...
In terms of who won or lost a trade, Josh Okogie lost his trade. Jordan Goodwin lost his trade. That's tough. Yeah. Grayson Allen coming in, like, cuts the minutes down for those guys. It's tough. But Allen, just, like, the defense is not bad. It's at least average, I feel confident in saying, as far as how confident we feel with the guys we've seen limited tape of. Grayson is, like, I feel confident saying he's at least an average defender.
Yeah.
And that's where average defender with a guy who shoots 40-plus high 40s from the corner... that's going to work.
Here's the crazy thing is the guys that we have penciled in right now, like KBD, Little, especially, we don't, and even Goodwin to some degree, we don't have, I know we didn't have him penciled in, but they have not played on like winning teams before. Like if there's going to be tanking and they're just not catching up to learning the new system and not, and having this learning curve about fitting in with the team that's very serious about winning, then like Damian Lee and Josh Kogi are just going to take those minutes because those guys we know are pros, have done the thing for a good team. Like Kogi did it last year where he hadn't been on this type of team and he's just like locked in. And so I think you have their insurance at the very least, if not going to be in penciled in because the other guys aren't getting it or whatever. So I think that's going to be interesting, is Bol Bol especially too, in this conversation of how quickly can you learn and figure out and follow like some very serious basketball men in like Booker and Durant and Vogel and learn this stuff real quick.
To close on this portion, like previewing the rotation, what just happened is I typed up a different nine. There are some similarities in there, but if I'm, so that's my nine in terms of guessing and who's maybe the best nine, but I want to see a healthy bit of Jordan Goodwin to start the year. I think you to again, go back to that doghouse better be damn near empty all year is what I'm saying. Like, I don't want to see anyone in the doghouse for that long. If they're in the doghouse, I want to see a lot of guys getting a lot of opportunities. Cause I think Jordan Goodwin, yes, Bol Bol, these guys, especially with more of the unknown at center now, you have to figure out what you have in these guys. So I want to see Eric Gordon nearly every night just because I think figuring out how he contributes offensively still with this much firepower already is really important. He cannot just be a catch-and-shoot guy, just like you just can't have Durant in the corner and be like, yay, gravity value. Like, no, that's not how it works. You need to get a little bit out of his driving. You need to get a little bit out of his, like, he is a three-level scorer.
Yeah.
A fourth one on his team. Goodwin, okay, the initiation stuff we talked about, how much of real is that? Is he the best perimeter defender on this team? He very well could be. If he's the best perimeter defender on this team and he can do the right thing in the corner, then he should probably be the fifth starter, and that's something you got to figure out now. Nasir Little, same. It's the similar kind of thing. Like, he could very well be, from an impact perspective, loose balls, rebounds, athleticism up and down the court, all that kind of stuff, plus everything I just talked about with Goodwin. He could be the fifth starter. KBD, I think, is you have to figure out what you have in him as well, and I think they will. But that's where a guy like Yuta or a guy like Damian Lee, to your point, like, I think you know what you have there. I don't think there's much mystery to those guys. Like, even Eric Gordon, you know what you have there. But to the center position, like, I think I know what we got in Drew Eubanks. I think you know what you got in Drew Eubanks. Don't know what you got in Bol Bol or Metsu. Like, you got to see him play. So I'm very curious to see. Maybe the one thing that I'm going to be asking about the most, it's so easy to go into a media day and write about how it's going to be a competitive training camp and there's going to be an open competition.
But that is
actually what is happening. And I want to see if Vogel, like, I want to ask, like,
until you get those 2 second rounders on that trade block and you just got to pull the trigger.
I know how you guys typically answer these questions. I know what you're going to say, but at the same time, like, are you going to be mixing and matching these guys as much as it seems like you should, given how many options you got to sift through in the next 6 months? And it's the same thing that I've said before, but in a different way now, with more emphasis on figuring out what you got. If they know by the end of January what they got, good and bad, they're cooking.
Yeah.
They're going to win the whole thing. If we are in March and we're still looking around, like, maybe they should go back to Kogi one more time just
trade,
to be sure.
Or we're talking,
like, can they package this? We should not be looking at this roster and being like, can they still reroute Allen and Little elsewhere and get a fifth? In theory, that's a good thing to do. And they should do it right now if they find the right guy who's a lockdown fifth guy. But like we talked about in the offseason, like, there was never going to be a Caleb Martin or OG Anunoby type to, like, emerge from here. It just wasn't going to happen. But, yeah, we'll see. I don't know, man.
I don't know. That's a good way to end every podcast, because do we really know anything? No. Oh, we forgot. This has been sitting here.
It's an underrated bobblehead. I had never seen it before. It's actually pretty...
Like, for our podcast listeners who are not on the video, we have a DeAndre Ayton bobblehead who just sat here with us. He's wearing sunglasses, carrying a cell phone, very dapper man wearing his Pumas.
Maybe the fit king of the team, DeAndre. He was great with his fits.
It was a good fit. It's a good bobblehead, but we might have to retire you, bud.
Pack some umbrellas, buddy. Yeah. I'm sorry. We're going to miss you. Huh? Dame got traded. You guys forgot to mention Damian Lillard. Jeremy, our producer, is letting us know that some guy named Damian Lillard got traded, and...
I did mention it halfway through. I'm on top of it. This is why I don't remember if we mentioned it off the bat. Do you think it was bad the Suns helped the Bucks do a thing that put a good player on their basketball team, even though Jrue Holiday left and then might be rerouted somewhere else?
It's just not how my brain works. I'm the wrong person to ask that. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, you already answered that. I knew the answer. Why did I do that?
Well, no, it's also like, I'm just like...
You should help yourself. What do they say? I don't know.
Remember with the Nuggets when in the postseason we were like, you just got to have eight guys, man.
Yeah.
They got the five in the best starting five in basketball. That Bruce Brown guy, sixth starter off the bench. That's fantastic. Hey, Christian Brown's good right away. Cool. Oh, Jeff Green is now actually being a positive contributor again in the playoffs. Eight guys, done.
Let's win a title with that, yeah.
Stick with me here. Are you ready?
Uh-huh.
Strapped in. Damian Lillard. Chris Middleton. Giannis Antetokounmpo.
That's good.
Brooke Lopez.
That's good.
Bobby Portis.
That's good.
Five names. Ready to hear the rest.
Uh-oh.
Malik Beasley.
Yeah.
Pat Connaughton, I think, is one of those guys.
Yeah.
Jay Crowder.
Yeah.
Draft favorite in Kellen's annual research the draft in 2 weeks tradition, Andre Jackson.
Okay.
Out of Connecticut. Suddenly, kind of, I saw Nakai's tweet that. Yeah, kind of sneaky important all of a sudden on this team. Robin Lopez is in the mix as well. Marjon Beauchamp?
Possibly.
Is it happening? Is it the time? Do they have the other three guys, Kev? Are they there?
They're very close. They might be one short.
Can I put you on the spot?
Yeah.
Do the Suns no longer have the best 1-2 in the league?
They do not.
Still think they do, but I'm the Dame guy, and I'm the Dame guy too, but I still think they do, but it's like it's very close now. I thought it was pretty undisputed before they had the best 1-2 in basketball, but talking about
that's
the guy.
Close.
Pretty much running the league right now. I know that's a bold claim with Giannis, but I feel like he is kind of...
Yeah.
It's him and Jokic running the league right now, at least they're co-running it. And then you add that Damian Lillard guy to it. Let me, before we go, because to your point on like, oh my gosh, what are they doing? Why are they letting this happen? What's going on? You should not be reacting like that. You know, I'm going to tell people how to react because that's my job, mm-hmm. right? You should not be reacting in that way about the Dame trade, but if Jrue Holiday's on the Lakers in the week,
I was imagining
brain
pels.
Capacity, neurons, protons, all those things buzzing around in my blood cells. I have not been able to piece together yet and look at the viability on this day, September 27th. Who is tradable? Who is not? Who could theoretically get Mr. Holiday? But I think that he is one of the most underrated players in basketball. He's coming off of maybe the best year of his career, probably the best year of his career. He is a... I can say this about a guy who isn't a superstar or even maybe a star. He's an amazing basketball player. I think Drew's amazing. And I think that if any team in the...
West.
You know who makes a lot of sense?
Pels and Clippers. Don't know how viable it is for the
you
Clippers.
You know how I've been... We used to do this thing where there was like a table in front of me, and I would do the bit right now where I would just bat my head on the table this time. Memphis, it's time.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
time. Give up every pick in the world. Go for it. Have this guy.
Give up Bane or something. I don't know what you have to give up in that.
That backcourt, him, Marcus Smart, and Ja Morant.
Yeah.
Desmond Bane.
Trade one of them. Yeah, you got to. That would be fun.
I'm not saying trade one. Just like have those four guys together. Play three guard lineups.
You have to trade someone. Do they have picks? They probably have a lot of picks.
Maybe they went too early on Mr. Smart because Drew Holiday is just a much, much better Marcus Smart. You were saying Pels, Clippers, Lakers. I'm going to mention like the D'Lo thing was like you have a tradable contract now. That's basically what you're doing.
Yeah.
There's got to be a Bobby Marks video somewhere or Windhorst video somewhere where they're talking about who can trade for him right now. Minnesota?
Yeah.
Like Conley and stuff?
Shake up there, yeah.
You know who would be fun, but it's never going to happen? OKC.
Yeah.
Him, Shea, Giddy. Do like Dort and stuff.
Two of the best perimeter defenders in the league, yeah.
Yeah. That's not going to happen, though. Sacramento?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I think it makes sense everywhere. But all all I'm saying is, Jeremy, the resident Miami fan of anything Miami, by the way, check that Marlins score. Sucks to suck. You got to hope he goes east because this could legitimately change things. I think that at the present, I believe the Suns are still, to me, co-favorites with the Nuggets. That is how I will list it out of respect to the defending champions. And they are much more of the known commodity than the unknown commodity. So I would even say in some respects they should be treated as the favorite. But there's a good chance that a third team joins that hunt here real soon. Because, again, I just think Drew Holiday is like immensely underrated. Like, he might not even – like, that Memphis thing, the reason why I think it works is, like, Drew just doesn't need the ball. He doesn't need the ball.
He'll still do the thing.
It's fine. I'm trying to manifest the Memphis team right now. I'm trying to make that happen. Talk about Grit and Grind coming back. That's the man who grits and grinds, you know what I'm saying?
I know.
When I say that, it probably means we should stop recording. Do you think so?
We've covered it. We've done some work here. We've ground.
We're going to have a different backdrop the next time we do this, bud.
Oh, Monday, media day.
Pending other things happening, I will say I think if Drew gets traded, we should come back. If he gets traded to the West, we should come back.
Okay.
Because I think that we sat here in the postseason or in the offseason, and something I kept saying was like, how much are other teams going to get better? And I thought the Suns got not lucky, but it was fortunate how the big moves were what Dallas did with Grant Williams, what Golden State did with Chris Paul, what Memphis did with Marcus Smart, what the Lakers did retaining guys, what they got back. Like, there wasn't really any land shifting kind of move, but I think Drew would be. So we'll be back for that, and maybe if they trade Keon Johnson for pick swaps, I'm sorry everyone, we're not going to be doing probably a breaking edition of the podcast for that, but I can confidently say we have started, we're underway. Maybe there was a chance where we did this podcast and we didn't have content coming for the next couple of days, but you, Eric Ruby, and I, shout out to Eric Ruby for the idea, he's been the captain of that ship, 36 and bothered. We are 10 days in now to Suns Post Today, where the three of us give our thoughts on some topic that is Suns related. And then we have If of the Fifth, which will continue. You and I are going to have conversations about that when the mic turns off, about what we want to do with it, because I have an Eric Gordon post waiting, but no one's going to read that today because they just want to read about Yusuf Nurkic and all these other new additions, which we are going to be writing about later in the week in that series itself and on that series as well. So make sure to check out the website. Go to our Twitters, go to our YouTube page where this video will be posted if you want to see how I managed the hand situation. I just kept rubbing my legs and then trying to, like,
I did some crosses.
See, I'm like half-closed fist right now because I kind of landed on that being a good thing, but then I started weirdly scratching my, like, side of my knees. Can you tell how much fun I'm having me not being in our studio anymore? Oh, brother. All right, we'll see you from Media Day on Monday. I didn't mention that part, right? Media Day.
You didn't. We have Media Day Monday. We'll record again then if nothing else happens in between.
What I said to you before we clicked record is the entire pressers for book especially could be just, hey, what's it like? Not Chris Paul's gone. Hey, man, Monty Williams is. Hey, man, DeAndre Ayton's gone. The guy.
Hey, you didn't talk. What? What up with that loss to the Nuggets?
Hey, man, you guys traded for Bradley Beal. Like, it just there's so much there to. Hey, Frank Vogel's your coach now. a lot there to unpack that we will with Mr. Booker and everyone else. And we'll tell you about it on Monday. Goodbye.